Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We're getting started a little bit earlier than normal. We've got a ball game coming up from Williams Arena. Minnesota battles Cornell. Our pregame show begins at 12:30. It's my pleasure to introduce our host, Tom Schroyer from Moss and Barnett. Tom, welcome. It feels colder than the temp would say. It's chilly.
Well, that wind is really quite striking, I think, when we come down through these passageways through the downtown building towers here. As always, though, we are snug and warm here in the studio and glad to be here for that. Our guest today, Steve, is my colleague in the practice of law, Mike Etmont. Mike is an attorney in our law firm's Creditors Remedies Practice Group, and he focuses on debt collection and fair credit debt collection practices. I would add quickly that Mike is from Lincoln, Nebraska, and welcome here to the Tundra, Mike.
Thank you, Tom. I just wanted to begin by saying initially, most of the judgments out there are really avoidable in the first place. A lot of resolutions can be reached even before a matter or dispute has to be litigated. So I would still, before discussing how to collect on judgments, still encourage the parties to discuss other options, negotiate settlements, or reach amicable resolutions before seeking legal advice.
So, Mike, today we're going to be talking about your practice area, which is one that involves collecting on judgments. And I know we hear a lot about people being awarded damages or being granted judgments, verdicts by juries for dollars to be recovered and paid. What happens, though, when a lawsuit actually ends?
When a lawsuit ends, the court will instruct the office, the clerk's office, to enter a judgment for a specific amount. That amount becomes a matter of public record and is docketed in whatever county that hearing, the court hearing, was held. By docketed, it's understood that other parties will be able to look up that information, and other third parties, including credit bureaus, credit card companies, essentially anyone seeking credit or mortgages, will be able to discover and see that a judgment exists against you. Any other third party can see it just as they could see anything else.
Now, a judgment standing alone is just that, though, isn't it? It's a sheet of paper on record in the county clerk's office that people can go look at.
A judgment standing alone is just that. It's really not worth anything more than the paper it's written on. The attempts to collect on that judgment are what make it, give it the teeth that is necessary to discourage people and hopefully encourage them to pay whatever debts they may owe or resolve those situations.
Now, we see a lot of judgments piling up these days. What are some of the statistics here in Hennepin County on the number of judgments that are being docketed, as you've just described it, and what are the percentages of recovery on those?
In Hennepin County, it's quite remarkable in the last few years. From 2006, the Hennepin County Court had only docketed approximately 12,000 judgments in that year. Within 3 years later, by the end of 2008, it's estimated that they'll be docketing nearly 20,000 judgments.
So this year alone, we'll see 20,000 judgments being docketed in Hennepin County.
Yes, in that three-year time span, the number of judgments will have nearly doubled.
Now that certainly reflects the downturn in the economy, I would guess.
I would think so. That it's definitely, as people are losing their jobs, being laid off, credit is being limited, the availability of funds has been severely cut back. It's really affected not only the increase in the number of judgments being entered, but also the number of those judgments that are actually collected upon.
Well, what are the figures in terms of actually turning a judgment into cash for the judgment creditor?
A nationwide average, and although the exact statistics are very difficult to find, but a nationwide average is typically agreed upon only between 15% and 25% of all judgments are ever satisfied. So that leaves anywhere between 75% and 85% of judgments that are really bad debt.
Now, when we're talking about a judgment, of course, we're talking about an actual court proceeding where someone's legal rights have been determined and it has been decided by a jury with the backing of a judge that legal rights have been violated and that the defendant owes the money lawfully. So we're not talking about a situation where people are acting outside of the law here.
No, that is correct. This is not the – a judgment's already occurred after a legal proceeding. The court's already found that the – in this case, what would be known as a judgment debtor is liable for a certain degree of money to what is also known as the judgment creditor. This is not the same as a credit card company and someone, an individual or business, being late on payments. That can be worked out prior to litigation. This is already the final step in the legal process where the courts determine that a certain amount of money is owed.
And so we're at the stage when we talk about a judgment where we're past the area where we have people being perhaps unfairly, unlawfully hounded for payment by a collection agency.
That's typically the case. Most pre-judgment accounts are handled by collection agencies, both internally from the original creditor, which could be the credit card company itself, or if the debt is transferred or handled by a regular collection agency, that is where you're more likely to receive the daily phone calls and those types of attempts to resolve the outstanding account. After the judgment entered, it tends to shift to more of a legal proceeding in which the judgment creditor will effectuate some type of legal proceeding, whether it be through garnishments or bank levies that may use the court's power to enforce and collect on that judgment.
And, Michael, now when we're talking about judgments here today, are we talking about any particular dollar amount, or are we talking about small judgments that ordinary people have maybe picked up in conciliation court, as well as large judgments that big companies have obtained against one another?
The process for collecting on any type of judgment is fairly similar, whether it's a $500 small claims or conciliation court judgment to a multi-million dollar judgment between businesses or individuals. The end result is actually a fairly similar process when you're looking at satisfying that judgment.
Given the low rate of collection on judgments, I imagine people want to be fairly careful about deciding whether to go ahead with the costs and time and other expenses of a lawsuit in any effort to collect money, because at the end of the day, as we were talking earlier, they might not be able to get water out of the stone.
That's absolutely correct. There is a definite cost value of proceeding with litigation. It would not be recommended to spend $5,000 to collect a $2,000 judgment when, statistically speaking, it's still uncertain whether or not you would actually be able to collect anything. At the same token, maybe that $5,000 would be much better spent collecting a $100,000 judgment. There's still a definite business consideration that needs to be made, whether it's a personal judgment or whether it's a judgment against a business.
Tom Schroyer, host of the program, our guest attorney today, Mike Ettman of the Creditors Remedies Bankruptcy Practice Group, on the topic of post-judgment collection remedies, turning a court judgment into money. It's not easy, and we'll have much more on that topic coming up. By the way, your calls are welcome as well on the program. 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226 is our phone number on the program. Once again, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. So you want a judgment? How do you get the money? We'll talk more about that coming up. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Minnesota Law continues on a Saturday morning. We're starting a little early today. We've got a ball game coming up from Williams Arena, Minnesota and Cornell. Our pregame show beginning at 12:30. Tom Schroyer is in, as always, here on Minnesota Law, and our guest, Mike Ettman, from the Creditors Remedies and Bankruptcy Practice Group. We're talking about judgments, turning judgments into money. And we're going to start with Martha in St. Paul. Martha, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning. I had received a judgment, and I tried to collect on it, and the individual went into the military. Is there a time limit as to how long I can wait to receive this judgment, or is it just gone?
Well, the answer is that there is a law known as the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act, which does prevent you from actually collecting money while this person is in the military. But the time judgment for a – or the time that a judgment is good for is typically longer than what most people remain in the military. Michael, do you know what that is?
Your judgment will be good for 10 years. While the person is on active status, you are not going to be able to proceed with post-judgment collection strategies against that person. However, what you would hope for is that by the end of that 10 years or sometime in that duration, that the person is no longer in an active status, and then you would be able to proceed and hopefully collect on that judgment.
Well, and in addition, is it possible to renew the initial judgment when the 10-year anniversary is about to expire?
Yes, you can also do that as well. Prior to the 10 years from the date of the entry of the judgment, you can initiate, typically it's done through an entirely separate lawsuit. Your claim is the judgment itself, but you can renew it for an additional 10 years. So you do have time. However, in your situation, it doesn't sound as though any immediate recovery will be forthcoming.
Our phone number on the program, Minnesota Law, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Our phone lines are open. We're going to go to Chris next. Chris, you're on the air. Hello. Chris, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Chris from Maple Grove.
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. My question is, I got about $20,000 or $20,000 in credit card debt. And I responded to something on the internet that people were going to, I could eliminate my debt or half of my debt if I subscribed to them or went through them. Now, do you know what's going to happen if I go through that? And I'm sure my credit rating will really decrease, but will these credit card companies, will they do a judgment against me?
Chris, that is a good question. There are several very reputable agencies that can help out with debt consolidation. However, there are a few points that you'd still need to be careful of. The first one being your credit rating. You're absolutely correct. If your accounts are already in default, if you're already late on the payments, then it's already affecting your credit rating. The credit card companies or collection agencies, whichever it may be, are not entitled, nor are they forced to deal with debt consolidation companies. It's a mutual understanding that as you pay that debt consolidation agency, that they will in turn pay the credit card companies at some reduced amount. However, it has to be agreed upon between both of them. There's nothing to state that the credit card company will accept their offer, thus causing your account to fall further behind. They still can proceed with litigation unless some agreement is entered into, typically in writing. Additionally, it could end up you'd want to really look into the fees and how much it's going to cost to go through a debt consolidation agency. There are several of them out there that have very low or otherwise free or very minimal costs. You want the money you're paying to them going to satisfy these various credit card companies and other creditors, not paying their fees. So just be very cautious in proceeding. Ask a lot of questions if you have concerns, and good luck.
Michael, would this tie back into the comment you were making earlier that in general most creditors or people pursuing judgments for other reasons, such as maybe an automobile accident or some other personal property right, that they'd be well advised to try to work things out before going to court and getting a judgment, which might at the end of the day prove to be uncollectible?
Absolutely. The problem that most people have is just going through the efforts of collecting on the judgment. The credit card companies in this situation or any other creditor would be well advised to attempt to reach some kind of amicable resolution. By agreeing with the party before litigation, you often it actually increases your chance of being paid. If a debtor's offering $100 a month, for example, then you can at least give some consideration that, well, if they're willing to offer that, perhaps they will come through on it and I won't have to go through this whole litigation process at the end of the day to get a judgment that I won't be able to collect on. So there is some consideration to, if you give a little back, that the debtor may be more willing to work with you in getting it resolved.
Would that same logic apply then once a judgment's been entered against someone in terms of both parties being really well advised to sit down and try to work something out?
The same logic would apply. The judgment is only an amount, but the judgment creditor can still satisfy the judgment for whatever amount they find reasonable. So that it's not necessarily to pay the full amount. You can come to an alternative resolution that maybe both parties will be happy with.
And if a party has a judgment, is that something that a judgment debtor should just ignore, or are there ramifications of even having an unpaid judgment hang out there?
You definitely don't want to have an unpaid judgment, and there's various reasons to that that I can get into in just a moment.
And we have to break for the news here at noon. Once again, Minnesota law underway. We started early today. We have a ball game coming up at 12:30. It'll be Minnesota and Cornell from Williams Arena. Our pregame show begins at 12:30. Once again, the news coming up at noon, then more Minnesota law here on News Radio 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota law presented by Moss and Barnett. We had an early start today. We've got a ball game coming up at 12:30, Minnesota and Cornell from Williams Arena. Our pregame show begins at 12:30. Each and every week, Tom Schroyer is our host. Our guest attorney today, Mike Ettman, our phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. So you win a judgment. How do you collect that money? That is a big question. And I remember when I was a kid, guys, my mom was in a car accident. Well, this was years ago, and probably before no-fault insurance and that sort of thing. And my dad went to conciliation court, which I believe is small claims court today, and got a judgment. And I just remember as a kid how much work it was, not only for my dad to get that judgment, but I don't think he ever saw any money about that. What does the court do to help people collect on these judgments? What happens after you win a judgment?
Sure. Well, starting very generally, there's several reasons why a judgment may go unsatisfied. From the creditor's point of view, it's possible that there's difficulty locating assets or funds necessary to satisfy the judgment. The debtor may have left the state, or all of their assets are what is known as exempt. From the judgment debtor's perspective, it may not even be possible for them to satisfy the judgment. Do they even have the necessary funds available to pay on the judgment? No matter if they have the best intentions or desire to make the payment, not everyone has a couple thousand dollars in their bank account. Now, what the court can do in that regard is there's several options, both judicial and non-judicial. Some of the non-judicial ones would be that the judgment does become a public record. It would show up on credit reports. Anytime you're seeking to attain any kind of financing, whether it be a mortgage, credit card, those companies will take that into consideration. It also forms a lien on any real property that you would own. So your home would show up as a lien against that property. The most common ways to satisfy a judgment would be through what is known as a wage garnishment and a bank levy. Now, a wage garnishment is usually done, completed by the creditor's attorney. The creditor can attempt to do it himself, but there is a lot of caution when doing that. But it's typically done through a creditor's attorney. What information you would need to know, though, is where the debtor is employed. Essentially, a wage garnishment is a formal request to the debtor's employer stating that because there's a judgment entered against them, did they now have to withhold a certain percentage of that debtor's income? Typically, that percentage is up to 25% of the net income. So it does have some teeth in that regard, but again, you need to know actually where the debtor is employed.
Now, would the court assist in finding out where this person, the court issues a judgment against someone, would the court assist trying to track this person down and find out where they work, where they live, etc.?
The court would not assist specifically. However, there are a couple other methods of actually discovering that information. The creditor could issue a what is called and request the court to issue what's called an order for disclosure, which is typically a one-page document front and back requesting numerous information about the credit or about the debtor. The court sends that to the debtor, and the debtor is obligated to return that directly to the creditor. Now, what that order for disclosure contains is requests pertaining to bank accounts, address information, personal property, employment information, and other typical asset discovery that one would think of. There's also the opportunity, once a judgment's entered, to conduct post-judgment discovery. Discovery meaning the typical depositions, the certain interrogatories and other types of questions that you can send directly to the debtor in hope that they will respond without having the creditor take additional steps to actually make the debtor respond. Of course, in this, there's no guarantees. So the statistics are actually working against you to some degree, and it does take some creativity in actually finding these assets. And again, it all comes down to whether the costs involved outweigh the amount of the judgment itself.
Now, certainly a wage garnishment is a common way to collect on a judgment, but you mentioned that there are some limitations on what can be garnished from someone's wages. I think you said it was 20%. Are there some other limitations that may come into play?
Yes, there are. There is. It's 25%. However, if that person is already being garnished by another creditor, if they owe taxes, either state or federally, if they are currently paying any type of child support directly from those paychecks, the taxes and child support would trump any of these judgment creditors from attempting to garnish those wages.
Scott in Oakdale, you're on the air. Hello, it's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good, good. The question I have is, I'm in the same situation. I did win a claim, about six years ago now, in conciliation court against a person. And we're in the same situation. I mean, the concern I have is, as you're explaining with the statement or the letter of disclosure that can be filled out, why in the world, when we're paying taxes for these judges and these court proceedings and everything, and it's a public service that we have a right to use, it's virtually deemed worthless because everybody I talk to can never collect on that claim or that judgment. And when I try to get a hold of Washington County, there's basically one number or one line that takes you to the person that controls this, and they never call you back. And I'm just concerned as to, number one, when it's settled, why they don't have the defendant, if they have indeed lost, fill out that information up front so it's ready to go, so judgments can be made and debts can be collected. And I'll hang up and listen to your call on that. Thank you.
You ask many, many good questions. The courts are very reluctant to get involved themselves in affirmatively assisting in the collection of debts in the fashion that you now have to do once a judgment's been entered. And in terms of getting information ahead of time, of course, the courts take the position that there's no necessary right to that information until there's been a judgment actually awarded and determined. So the courts are really there to provide the process, but it's really up to the individual owning the judgment or the business who gets the judgment to take steps to affirmatively get this information. And Mike, there are ways to get information outside of just relying on the honoring by the debtor of a summons or a subpoena to appear and give that information.
That is correct. There are other ways to discover the assets, but eventually you're going to have to go back to the court in order to obtain an order to actually seize any of those assets, and that is typically done even if you can find them through the sheriff's office. So while the judgment may be effective, discovering the actual assets may require further investigation.
We have more coming up. If you have a call, a question for Mike Ettman or Tom Scheuer, by all means give us a call on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Here on News Radio, 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom Scheuer is our host. My name is Steve Thompson. We have Mike Ettman in studio from the Creditors, Remedies, and Bankruptcy Practice Group. Collection remedies, turning a court judgment into money. It is difficult.
No question about it, Steve. Lots of practical and legal considerations. And one thing that debtor or creditors run into once they get a judgment, sometimes anyway, is that there are certain assets of debtors that are exempt from collection. Mike, let's talk about those briefly. What generally fits into this category of assets, property that are exempt from being reached ever by a creditor?
The most common one known to people is the homestead exemption, which typically will indicate that a certain part of a person's home, so long as it's homesteaded, will be exempt from execution of a judgment. Currently in Minnesota, that amount is $300,000 in equity. So, for example, if there's a $500,000 home, and it's a $400,000 mortgage, there's only $100,000 in equity, thus that entire $100,000 would be exempt. Now, take that same $500,000 home with $100,000 mortgage, that $400,000, only $300,000 of that would be exempt. However, in this current market situation, there's not too many people left that have over $300,000 in equity in their homes. Other property would include up to a certain extent, there are dollar limitations, but clothing, furniture, television, tools of the trade, which would be any instruments you would use that are reasonably necessary to your livelihood. Other items such as family Bibles, musical instruments. There's just a variety of different property that is personal property and that would otherwise be able to be recovered, but that the state has found that we just can't take it.
To the phones we go. Dan and Rogers, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hello, sir. How are you today?
Good. Good, Dan.
Good. My question is actually a little bit prior to obtaining the judgment on an individual that has a debt with you. It is actually how to successfully get them back into the courtroom for the judgment hearing. It seems to me that there are people that are able to disappear pretty easily without forwarding addresses or employers, and the court puts the onus on you to get them served the papers within 60 days to bring them back in to even get the judgment done. Can you comment on that?
Sure, Dan, and you're exactly right. The unfortunate reality is that people do have a habit of disappearing, and the court does put that burden on you to find them. Depending on the size of the amount that you're seeking, there are investigative agencies that could assist in those methods, but typically what we run into is debtors will move out of state. It may almost be impossible to track them down. They may even be living with other relatives out of state. They do not maintain any type of home address, mailing address. Their accounts may even list a prior address. But that is a very difficult and a real problem when looking at litigating against someone, because you do need to find them and personally have a lawsuit delivered to them. So there's really no straightforward, simple answer that I can give you, but perhaps looking into one of those investigative agencies would be a good start.
Diane is next. Diane, we only have about a minute left, so please go quick.
Okay. My son was dealing with a law firm about a collection with a business, and he was cooperating with them. Then they sent him a summons for a judgment, and it said on there if he didn't call back, it would go to court. Well, he called back. They garnished his checking account for the recovery of the funds, but now they put it on his credit report anyway. Is there a way to get that removed?
If I'm understanding correctly, that the judgment is then satisfied, it would be reflected on the credit report as a public record as being satisfied. However, if a certain part of that is not satisfied and remains outstanding, then it's going to continue to be on that credit report until such a time. But a credit agency looking at it will be able to tell if it was paid or not. Eventually, it will be removed.
And the program has gone very quickly, as always. Mike, a pleasure to meet you. Great job on the program today. Thanks for all the phone calls as well.
It's been a lot of fun to talk to the folks, Steve, and we're hoping we can get some calls next week when we talk about shareholder rights law in Minnesota.
All right, very good. Tom Schroyer, our host on the program. Once again, big thanks to Mike Etman on the program today. Turning a court judgment into money. Once again, thanks to Dennis Matuzak, our studio coordinator, and Jim Engbloom. My name is Steve Thompson. It's Minnesota Law on 830 WCCO.